Wrapping up another month, you and I chatting it up Tuesday, April 30th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. I opened the show asking why President Biden hasn't made any public comments regarding college protests across the U.S. tinged with anti-Semitism. Connecticut Energy Marketers Association head Chris Herb updated us on a bill pushing state consumers toward electric heating, and Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio on some dual roles held by state lawmakers. So I was with a keen ear, as many of you undoubtedly do. I was listening to our top of the hour national newscast there about all the stuff going on, you know, nationally and around the world before Chris picked it up with the local headlines, as we do top and bottom of every hour right here in the afternoons from 2 to 6. And I heard some comments or a comment there from Mike Johnson, who is the Republican House Speaker. Of the Congress. He is House Speaker. He is the number three person in the U.S. government. Of course, the president is number one. The vice president, whomever he or she may be, is number two. The Speaker of the House is number three. And the Senate President Pro Tem, I believe, is number four. So Mike Johnson, if God forbid something bad were to happen to Joe Biden and or Kamala Harris, Mike Johnson would step in as the leader of the U.S. So sometimes we hear House Speaker and we hear, oh, yeah, well, that's just the Republicans now. And it's just one chamber of commerce. No, it's not just that. Mike Johnson is number three. So when he speaks, when any House Speaker speaks, be it Mike Johnson or back when it was Nancy Pelosi or when it was Newt Gingrich or before that, whenever, that is something to be listened to, even if you don't happen to like that person or not be of that party. And Speaker Johnson said something today which I find kind of fascinating. And if the parties were reversed, the mainstream media, the big alphabet networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, everybody's head would be exploding. But because it's Joe Biden, nobody's saying anything. What am I talking about? Well, it's what Speaker Johnson said earlier today. With all this stuff going on campuses all across the U.S., a lot of it being egged on by outside agitators, a lot of it patently anti-Semitic, Speaker Johnson asked the proper question. Where is Joe Biden?
We desperately need, the country needs, clear moral authority. We need the President of the United States to speak to the issue and say, this is wrong.
Man, he's right. Where's Joe? Where is he? What's he doing? Imagine, if you will, let me take you back. Imagine if this was during the Trump years or any other Republican, during the Nixon years or during the Bush 1 or Bush 2 years, whatever. Imagine if this was going on while there was a Republican in the White House. There would be screams and howls from every corner of the mediaverse. Well, we know Republicans are anti-Semitic because the president's not saying anything. Where's President Bush? Where's President Eisenhower? Where's Reagan? Where's Trump? And that would be, to me, as a guy that's done my fair amount of reporting in my life and have a journalism degree, to me, that would be a viable question. Where is the guy that is supposed to put partisanship aside? Where's the guy? I know he's worried about losing Michigan. He's worried about the Muslim vote in Michigan. Well, you know, Mr. President, sir, with all due respect, too bad. Some things need to transcend politics, maybe for a day. Maybe for a day. And for that matter, where's Jim Himes on this? I couldn't find anything. Maybe I'm wrong. Where are the statements of condemnation from our congressional delegation? Where's the news conference to talk about this? Has there been? I don't know. Maybe there has been. Maybe I missed it. Has Rosa DeLauro come out and held a news conference anywhere in the 3rd District to talk about some of the patent anti-Semitism that's kind of gone on at Yale because of this in her hometown, a few blocks away from her, hoity-toity district there on Worcester Street? Where's she? Where's Jim Himes? Where's Johanna Hayes? Where's Joe Courtney? Where's John Larson? Where are these people? How come it's only Republicans speaking up about this? Well, you know, because they're a bunch of fundamentalists, and the only reason they support Israel is because of fundamental Christianity. All right, and the problem with that is what? Is what I actually heard that from some dweeb the other night on some cable channel. Well, you know that the only reason that the fundamentalist Christians support Israel is because it fits in with their narrative. So who cares how it fits? At least they have the balls to say something, right? They have the testicular fortitude, igulioni koyong, as they say, as my people used to say. But you notice every day goes by and nothing from the White House. Where is Joe Biden? Hey, you Democrats, you tell me. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Is he out of bed yet today? What's he so afraid of? I'm serious about this. There are some things that need to transcend politics. He found time for all these yucks Saturday night of the White House Correspondents Association dinner. Okay, that's good. It's good that he went there, poked some fun at Trump. Nothing wrong with that. But during the week or for the 6 o'clock or 11 o'clock news, why isn't he holding a news conference at the White House to talk about this and some other stuff, too? Where is he? What's he so afraid of? Where's the leadership? Which is what people would be saying if it was a Republican hiding like this. Mike Johnson is right.
We desperately need, the country needs, clear moral authority. We need the President of the United States to speak to the issue and say this is wrong.
Yeah, he's right. Where is the moral leadership from Joe Biden? Where is it? Can somebody find it for me? Please.
We went to Columbia University on Wednesday. We faced that hostile crowd to speak clearly with clarity and conviction and consistency about this issue.
Mike Johnson sounds like the adulterer. Oh, he's just a right-wing Bible thumper from Louisiana. No, he sounds like an adulterer. And he doesn't want to hear anything about, well, it's just free speech.
This is not free speech. I'm a constitutional law attorney. I used to litigate free speech cases with regard to campus expression on university campuses.
So where is the leadership from the other side? Are they too worried about Michigan? Are they? And you may go, well, what's this with Michigan, Paul? I'm not following this. Michigan should be a fully blue state. It probably will end up being that. But during the Democratic primary a few weeks or a month ago, a lot of folks voted uncommitted because Michigan, in particular the city of Dearborn, has a very high Muslim American population. And if enough of them stay home, Donald Trump will win Michigan. So, and you can Google it just when you get home tonight, if you're sitting down watching a game or having a little late snack, go to your web browser, put in Muslim vote Michigan Biden, and all you get are these stories like, oh boy, he's in trouble because of Israel. He's got to keep Israel. He's got to watch what he says. No, you say what you say as the President of the United States. And you come out and you say, stop it. You say enough. And we even have local politicians. You know, they cracked down at UConn the last night. Oh, well, we have to be careful of people's freedom of speech. No, Mike Johnson got it right.
This is not free speech. I'm a constitutional law attorney. I used to litigate free speech cases with regard to campus expression on university campuses.
So that was one of his specialties, free speech on university campuses. But again, let's not get caught in the weeds here. I ask you a simple question. Where's Joe Biden? Can you imagine if this was a Republican in the White House and Donald Trump or George H.W. Bush or George W. Bush or Ronald Reagan? Can you imagine if they were yucking it up at the White House Correspondents Association dinner this past Saturday, as Mr. Biden did? And good for him. You want to jab Donald Trump? Go at it, Mr. President. You deserve it. He had a couple of laughs Saturday night. That was fine. But, man, are they quiet during the week? And I don't want to hear, well, you know, the Karine Jean-Pierre. No. That doesn't count. Karine Jean-Pierre doesn't count. The guy in the big seat counts. And, by the way, when he comes, a couple of weeks ago, they said a statement, right? You remember when the Democrats crawled up Donald Trump's backside because he said many fine people on both sides. Well, did you notice Joe Biden did the same thing in a statement a couple of weeks ago? And there are people that don't understand the situation in Palestine. No. Stop. You criticize Trump as you had a right to do about fine people on both sides. Well, don't you do it. But again, where's Joe? Rick's in Milford. Rick, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I was at the protests for Palestine in the winter, mm-hmm. in New York City.
Yeah.
And I could tell you for firsthand experience, these are not the same people that were at those protests. Those protests mm-hmm. were largely peaceful.
Yep.
They were regarding the ceasefire, and they were regarding mm-hmm. disproportionate response.
Yep.
These new people, this is a whole new team of people that are trying to piggyback off of the pro-Palestinian movement and use it to basically burn stuff to the ground
yeah.
during an election year.
Yeah.
And I mean, anybody who doesn't see that, it's a completely different crowd. There was more females
mm-hmm.
A couple months ago. These crowds, there's a lot of 18 to 20 year old men that are showing up.
Mm-hmm.
They're masked. They're smashing through the window. Very reminiscent of the January 6th crowd. And it's there needs to be investigations
yeah.
into who is showing up at these protests now, because this isn't all college kids doing this.
Well, and Rick, some of the news outlets, and thank you for the call, Rick. I remember talking to you in the winter, and thanks for staying in touch. Yeah, some of the news outlets are saying now that the movements here on some of these campuses may be being infiltrated, as you were, which and Rick, thanks. Which means all the more that the president needs to come out from his hiding, make an address, and say, hey, by the way, my intelligence sources tell me X, Y, and Z. So we have to find out who these rabble-rousers are, who is hijacking this. But you can't hide in the Oval Office because you're worried about Michigan. You can't. Right now, though, return visit to one of our contributors, Chris Herb from the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association, warning us again about 1 week to go in the General Assembly and some bill that could be passed that in a lot of people's minds doesn't make any sense, at least yet. Chris, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm nervous as always at this time of the year.
Well, as the clock counts down in Hartford, Chris is like, what are they going to do here? Now, they, the General Assembly, the majority in particular, looking at House Bill 5004, HB 5004. What are the concerns that you and your group members have about this, Chris?
Sure. Specifically, you know, we started, you know, we ended last year and came into the legislative session with the threat of mandating electric vehicles and banning gasoline-powered cars and diesel trucks. And suddenly that seems to have waned the interest in it. And now the attention is pulled to, they want to come after your heating system. They want to install 310,000 heat pumps, which frankly has a price tag of $6.2 billion. You know, that's going to come out of homeowners' pockets if plans like these nominees are to move forward by the end of the session.
Now, the plan here, would this bill, Chris Herb, this HB 5004, if people are scoring at home and they want to look at this over the weekend, you can pull it up online, HB 5004, does this set up a mandate, or does it pick winners and losers in the market? How would this work?
Yeah, so it is not a mandate per se, but don't be fooled. It's exactly where they're going. You know, this is an election year, so they're not so bold to reveal all of their intentions. Right now, they just want to look at it. And part of what we've said is that there are other options to lower emissions that don't cost consumers anything. And those are the fuels that the people I represent sell, the bioheat, you know, biodiesel that's made right in New Haven, Connecticut, the largest production facility on the East Coast, can lower emissions without any cost. Heat pumps cost $20,000 to $40,000 per home for a whole home conversion. So let's not fool ourselves. Let's not get lulled into a sense of security here. This is what they're trying to do. They're coming now after your heating system.
Chris, here's the thing, and when I read the brief you sent me, and this is not the first time this has popped up, you and I have talked about this. I see this and I say, well, okay, electric cars and electric heat pumps. Listen, here's a question I have, Chris, and it's a basic question. And if a dummy like me on the radio can ask this, I'm sure much smarter people like you and the consumers are asking this. Where's all this electricity going to come from, Chris Herb? I don't get it. Well, electric cars, electric this, heat pumps. Okay, fine. If you want a heat pump, fine. Where's all the power going to come from?
Well, that is maybe the million-dollar question. After you get tagged with $6.2 billion in cost to install these things, now how do we get enough power to be able to supply them so that they run and we keep the lights on? And in ISO New England, the power grid operator, in their system plan project list, before this bill was even contemplated, they said that there's a price tag of $1.3 billion just to try to shore up the grid as it stands today. So I'm telling you, the costs keep coming in, and none of them are accounted for in this bill.
And again, never mind the grid, Chris Herb, but look, if we go cars and heat pumps and whatever else, you've got to generate more power. And what is going to happen? This is a rhetorical question. You know this, but I'll tell people, what happens anytime you get any sort of even a buzz, Chris, that, hey, one of the utilities may want to build a generating plant? I mean, people's heads explode. Who thinks this is not going to happen and have this delayed for decades?
But Paul, so here's the irony. There's a section in the bill that actually requires our regulators to open up a docket to look at rolling back natural gas. Natural gas supplies up to 60% of our electricity. So if you're reducing the amount of power that is being produced with natural gas through this bill, and you're increasing the amount of electricity we need by installing 310,000 heat pumps, well, guess what that results in? It results in the power going out. There's no other – I don't need to be a math genius to figure that out. My seventh grader could do that.
Chris Herb with us from SEMA, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. We're talking about House Bill 5004 that is going to turn the screws eventually on people to push these heat pumps, which does require electricity. Now, Chris, earlier in our discussion, you talked about biodiesel. People kind of know what that is. A few years ago, it was like, hey, ain't this a neat trick? Well, it's not a neat trick anymore. Talk about what's going on in New Haven and the future of biodiesel.
Yeah, here's the good news. It's the best kept secret in Connecticut from an environmental perspective and from a consumer perspective. So biodiesel is a renewable fuel that has a nearly B2 equivalency to normal heating oil, except this fuel comes from used cooking oil. It comes from plant oils and animal fats, where we actually take them and turn it into a fuel that you can use with your existing equipment. So again, no cost to the consumer. We just pull up to your house like we always have for the last century. We pour in biodiesel instead of heating oil, and you get the same heat, you get the same reliability with no cost. And that's what we're saying is include us in the bill. Don't just look at heat pumps as a way to decarbonize. Look at biodiesel as one so that family-owned businesses who compete and drive prices down are still in the game. If we have to leave this up to Eversource, you know what we get in the future, higher and higher rates.
Yeah, and Chris, supposing that I'm sure among the thousands of people listening to us now, there's some people out there going, hey, this biodiesel sounds interesting, but I have a regular oil furnace and burner and tank, and I know this would obviously, Chris, need an estimate of somebody coming over to the house, maybe, or wherever they live. So is there a conversion required? How tough is it to, say, heat your home or your business using biodiesel?
this is the perfect environmental solution. It doesn't require any of that. We literally just deliver it and use it in your heating system that you have today. So there's no one has to come and look at it. No one has to install a new piece of equipment. No one has to charge you to do anything different. All you do is receive it. And the million-dollar question is, well, how much more does it cost, this magic fuel that we're delivering to Connecticut? And the answer is nothing more. It's about the same price as heating oil. So you get all the benefits with no added costs.
All right. So if somebody's listening to us, Chris Herb, and they want to maybe take a look at this, they should call their oil supplier and just ask about it?
Absolutely. So today, under state law, every home in Connecticut is already getting a certain percentage of it. If you don't know what percentage you're receiving, it's on your delivery ticket, or you could call your old home heating oil company, who's now a bioheat company, and they'll give you more information.
And finally, Chris, supposing tomorrow thousands more people said, hey, this biodiesel sounds like the way to go, I'm not sold on the heat pumps here. Is there enough capacity, or will more biodiesel suppliers have to come online here?
Well, like I said, we're fortunate to have the largest production facility on the East Coast of the United States right here in New Haven. So that's the first thing that we have is we have plenty of supply. There is obviously a limit to how much used cooking oil there are, but the soybean is the largest plant oil that's available, and the soybean feeds the world. So as the world's population grows, we have more of this waste oil that we convert to heat. So it's a really nice marriage of not having to throw out waste oils. We get to recycle them by using them as heating fuel.
So you're telling me that French fries and churros and fried chicken and deep fried stuff, is that going to save the planet? Is that what you're telling me, Chris?
Well, I'm a pretty hefty guy, and eating more bacon and cheeseburgers is probably not in my health's best interest, but it is in the environment's best interest.
See that? Absolutely. All right, check it out online, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. That's CTEMA.com. CTEMA.com. The bill that we're watching for you and you folks have to keep an eye on for the rest of the session for about the next 7 or 8 days. That's HB5004. Chris Herb alerting us to that. Chris, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir, and we'll chat down the road.
Thank you. Go get him. Call your legislator.
Yep, thank you. Yeah, we'll do that. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. So that's it, folks. It's HB5004. Megan Portfolio joins us. The Hartford Portfolio is the blog. This woman I was texting with earlier today, asking her if she was watching CTN again. You were watching it on 2 screens? You had 2 feeds going? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, I still do, but they're on pause right now. Someone's got to watch these guys.
Yes, and for that, Megan, we are indebted to you. How are you on this fine Tuesday?
Oh, I'm great. Oh, I can't wait to see this video you're talking about.
Yeah, I'll send you the link for it. It's so sad. But first, on your latest piece that has gone up, you are pointing out something, Megan, that just drives me nuts. The fact that there are people in the General Assembly casting votes and touting things while it's legal for them to run, most people with a brain would look at some of the stuff and say, well, that's a conflict of interest. But I think this goes on more than people know, right?
I mean, I grew up in Connecticut, and I left for a little over a decade. And when I came back, so I came back during Joe Arsimowitz's reign as speaker. And I know it's been going as far back as that, because he worked for AFSCME, and he legally was allowed to vote on issues affecting AFSCME. George Logan, same deal. I know a lot of times people will recuse themselves. Like, for example, Gail Mastrofrancesco from Wolcott recused herself yesterday from the government-run media scheme that they're trying to get past, where they're forcing state agencies to give ad dollars to certain media. Like, I don't see anything wrong with government being forced to be in cahoots with the media.
Yeah.
But Gail actually owns a small local newspaper.
Sure.
She recused herself from,
of course,
from the vote. That's
the right thing to do. Yeah. Okay. So go ahead.
So, last week I talked about this, about the CBAC state worker raises that they're getting. And of course I watched the hearing, and I was, both House and Senate. Well, the Senate was very interesting because the AFT president, the American Federation for Teachers, who's also a senator, Jan Hockadel, couldn't just quietly like vote for this contract that is a positive for her membership.
Mm-hmm.
She actually stood up and was in favor of it and kind of like giving her members like a wink and a nod, like, hey, we appreciate your service. I'm like, they just don't even care. They're just right out in your face with their conflict of interest. And what's interesting with her to be a president of AFT, according to their bylaws, an elected position every 2 years. So, I mean, she can just easily go back to her membership. Hey, guys, look what I did for you. 4.5% raise. I voted for it. I think you should reelect me again. And so I actually took it a step further, and I looked at their public filings, mm-hmm. AFT. She's making $154K a year at this gig. So she's making three times as much as in this gig than she's making as a state senator. And then she's voting on things that not only benefit her, and they benefit her members as well. And it's perfectly legal.
And you mentioned that the last time around 2 years ago, you know, the Democrats in the state, the majority, all they were hammering our buddy George Logan about, oh, how dare he run and work at Aquarian. I mean, do they look at themselves in the mirror, or I guess they don't, and just laugh that everybody else are suckers, right?
I mean, I don't know all of the instances of George's voting record. I do know that he did vote on things that were Eversource related, and mm-hmm. but he actually works for the water division.
Yeah, Aquarian. Yeah.
Aquarian.
Yeah.
So, and I know he did go to the Office of Ethics or Board of Ethics, whatever they call it, to ask if it was okay.
Sure.
And he did get the okay. So, I mean, if it was me personally, I would have recused myself. But I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. He actually took it upon himself to ask if it was okay. So mm-hmm. I commend him for that. And yeah, they were trashing him all over social media, all in the regular media for that. But what in Hockadel's instance, like she has, this is a pattern. This isn't like a one vote for her. Like she voted for the pandemic pay for state workers, mm-hmm. which some were getting like $5,600. Like there was a UConn, I think she was UConn nurse, $5,600. But if you looked in the private sector, the max they could get was $1,000, mm-hmm. and it was on a sliding scale for salary. So, you know, during COVID time, nurses, you know, many of them are mandated overtime. So it's pretty easy to reach the threshold, and many of them got nothing.
And it's funny, I think, or sad, funny/sad, Megan, and we're talking to Megan Portfolio, that if you or I went out on the street and we went to a street corner or a mall or a transit station and explain, hey, by the way, there's this state legislator, and it shouldn't matter what party's saying, hey, they cast this vote, but here's their background. You know, Megan, my gut tells me that most people, regardless of party, would say, hey, that's a little screwed up, right? I mean, I think this stuff is allowed because simply, and people are busy, they don't dive into it, they're not policy people like you and I, they don't know, and it's no fault of their own. They just don't know this stuff. At least that's my feeling of what I found out over the years.
Oh, I got so many emails over the weekend from my column. I think I only got one hater, which actually it upsets me because I have a lot of
trolls. Yeah, what's
like,
up?
What am I doing wrong? Where are my haters at? But I got so many emails over the weekend, and people were like floored. They're like, how does this happen? I'm like, what can I do about it?
And I'm nothing.
Like, the only thing we can do about it is encourage lawmakers to police themselves better and, you know, get a bill in and tighten the reins on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying you can't hold another job. I mean, these guys pretty much have to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they're making like 50, 55 grand a year for part-time legislature. And a lot of them actually do work a full year.
Sure.
So I'm not trying to begrudge them their salary. But, I mean, and there's going to be instances where your employer or you are going to benefit from something. And it's nothing to recuse yourself, especially when there's the vote, like the CBAC vote. That her not voting would not have made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
The majority party voted for that. You know, it was across party lines. We have a supermajority in the state. Her not voting for that one thing wouldn't have made a difference. The contract still would have gotten through.
Yeah.
So, you know, her doing that and giving a wink and a nod to her membership, I mean, I'm not trying to put words in her mouth or presume that I know what she's thinking, but it's not a good look.
No, and you're right. It would have gone through. She could have looked magnanimous and stepped aside and gone to her leadership and say, hey, I'm in favor of this, but I just think it's the, you know, right thing to do and step aside. But she didn't. And unless the General Assembly calls out people on both sides of the aisle and have a better mechanism for that, it's just not going to change. Megan Portfolio, the guest, as always, this segment on Tuesday. Senators' dual roles raise ethical questions amid legislative decisions. Megan, thanks. We appreciate it. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, you too, Paul. Bye.
All right, thanks. Megan Portfolio there.